Chapter 47. I felt Gran-Gran as she died. One final connection let me see her as she sank into her seat on the bridge. Not the same ship she'd landed on Detritus in, but somehow still her ship. The ship her people had made, the ship she'd claimed by birthright. She had arrived on the Defiant, and she would leave on it. She'd evacuated everyone else, so she was alone as she died. "No," she sent to me. "I have you." Gran-Gran. She was gone by the time I thought it. Gran-Gran had been inhibited and prevented from hyper-jumping away. She'd stayed to pilot the ship, staring the enemy in the face, brought down by Braid's mad insistence that destroying this symbol of insolence would break us. Gran-Gran died a hero, yes, but she was still gone. My soul contorted. I barely noticed as Braid forced me off her. A piece of me recognized what she was doing when she leveled her pistol at me, and the air warped, not really by conscious effort on my part. My powers protected me by instinct this time, because when Braid fired, the shot went straight into the nowhere. She cursed and tried again from another angle. Same result. When she sent in a guard to grab me, he ended up suffocating in the reaches of space halfway across the galaxy. I barely noticed. I was watching particles of light from the hologram break apart and vanish. The Defiant. Gran-Gran. I barely even registered that Detritus's gun platforms somehow hyperjumped into the space the Defiant had been heading toward. The slugs there had let them through. The emplacements shot back. Pain welled up inside of me, like a reactor going critical. So much emotion, so much anguish. I screamed, howling into the sky, my hands forming claws. I couldn't handle it. I'd said I could withstand the loss of friends, but this, I couldn't lose Gran-Gran. It's too much, Chet thought. It's too much. I can't. All along, part of this panic was his. I'd learned some lessons about grief, but he still hadn't. My pain at losing my grandmother was too much when amplified by his inability to handle grief. Together, our souls vibrated in a cacophony of agony, loss, panic, terror, pain. I felt something warm wrap around me, another mind like comforting arms, a slug, another, a third, 100 of them. It was the inhibitor slugs, left alone in their isolated pods in the frozen emptiness of space. They noticed my pain, and they came to me. Soon, there were over 1,000 of them, holding me mentally, supporting me, not trying to explain away my pain, but comforting me in it, letting me know they were there. I had to suffer, but I didn't have to do it alone. In that moment, I understood why they had stayed, why not one of them would escape when given the chance. That would have meant abandoning the others to their torment. They survived because they were together. I took their love, their support, and clung to it, then quested outward.
Not alone, Chet thought. Not alone.
No, I wasn't alone. I'd never been alone. I reached out and found. I'm here, Kimmelin said in my mind. She didn't know what was happening, but she'd felt me reaching out in my pain. Spin, I'm here.
I'm here,
Ned, on Platform Prime with command.
I'm here.
Arturo.
I'm here.
FM.
Spensa? Jorgen. Oh, Scud, it's good to feel your mind.
All of them, even Alanik, Sadie, T-Stall, and Catnip, Kauri and the Kitsen, Shiver and Deliz.
Thank you, Deliz whispered to me, for bringing me home.
More distantly, I felt Maxim and Peg, even a strange, worried mind that was vapor. They sensed me looking for them, and I felt their warmth join that of the thousands of slugs. Before their love, the pain didn't vanish, but it looked so, so small, like a candle in front of a sun. With that perspective, both Chet and I knew we could handle this. I'd been through it before and survived. Maybe I hadn't dealt with my father's passing in the most healthy of ways, and losing Bim and Hurl had only exacerbated that. I was, however, more capable now. Gran-Gran had died on her own terms, in a way she'd likely always dreamed of doing, by luring the enemy into a trap, then springing it. She'd lived a full life and had gone out like she was in a story. None of that dulled my pain, but it did contextualize it. I could live with this.
But she's gone, Chet thought. Gone forever.
No, I replied. I remember her. You remember her.
That's pain.
That's life.
Can we really do this?
He asked.
Can we really just keep living with this?
In response, I let my mind hold the Delver. I joined the chorus of thousands of Tanics, of my friends. I understand, I thought. We understand. Slowly, Chet's panic subsided, and his soul aligned with mine. It seemed wondrous that it worked. He was a being that had felt so alone when experiencing loss that it had created millions of clones of itself. And yet, was it truly that odd? They'd been isolated in the nowhere. That was the problem, wasn't it? The Delver let out a long sigh, and I felt his emotions as if they were my own. Comfort, gratitude, strength. All of that love, the mere fact that the Delver understood deeply that others cared, well, it legitimately helped. And at long last, Chet accepted that there was only one way forward, one way to survive the pain. With the help of so many, he walked the path on his own and found that you could get through darkness. Though sometimes a friendly light was required to show the way. Chapter 48, Braid. Braid watched her fleet go up in flashes of light. Well, sometimes you had to break a few skulls to make a throne of bones, eh? At least now they'd have some war heroes to celebrate in parades and whatnot. Considering what the superiority military had done to her family, she wasn't going to let a lost ship here or there bother her. This did strand her without a fleet for the moment, though she had many, many more ships she could call upon. Winzik's timidity might actually have helped her. If she'd had the entire fleet ready at the start of this battle, she'd probably have sent them all at the Defiant, right into those planetary defense guns. Traitorous slugs, letting those through. She almost gave the order to kill them all, but then that would destroy her inhibitors completely. Even working partially, it was probably best to leave them in place. She'd just have to remember she couldn't rely on them. She pressed a cloth to her split lip and shot a glance at Spencer, who knelt at the side of the room, head bowed, eyes closed, air distorting around her like waves of heat. The rest of the room was in shambles, littered with broken bits of metal, overturned tables, and discarded tablets. Her staff stood around, baffled. There was a large crowd of them, perhaps too many. Her 6 most trusted generals and admirals, 8 members of her personal guard, a dozen or so minor functionaries who were as interchangeable as pairs of socks.
"What do we do about her?"
Gavrich asked, the tall Tanasi general seeming strangely uncertain. Braid had never known him to be afraid of anything.
"I'll think of something," Braid said. "You need to focus on the battlefield. What's the word on the reinforcements I called up?" "Ready to hyperjump in," Gavrich said. "Only 2 carriers and 3 destroyers. The others are growing Gludendias. I think perhaps they don't want to join the battle. Years of training, and now that they're facing an actual war, they're slow to respond." Bring in those that are ready and have them array themselves around Evensong. Alert for enemy gun emplacements teleporting in, she said. And start broadcasting the destruction of the human ship as a symbol that we're valiantly protecting everyone. Then start threatening the captains that are dallying.
Understood, sir, he said.
They won't be able to use that hyper-jumping trick if we're watching for it, Braid said. Look, they had to contact each inhibitor station in person. If we watch for that and have ships arrayed to fire on platforms as they appear, we should be safe. Do be careful, though. The enemy is going to make a play for Evensong and the slugs.
He glanced at the hologram.
General, Braid said. It was worth the losses to bring down the rebels.
An entire fleet? He asked. For one ship?
Scrud. That was more questioning than she'd heard from him in years. And he was right. She'd thrown her forces away too easily. But she couldn't show weakness now. She needed to show something else entirely if she was to make good on her destiny.
Ships are meaningless to us now, General, Braid said. Cannon fodder. We won't rule by their power alone.
You mean,
he said. Braid nodded. It looked like maybe Spensa was consumed by grief. It was time to move. Braid slipped into the nowhere fully and reached out to the thousands upon thousands of hiding delvers.
You felt her, Braid said. You know I have her.
Is she contained? They asked.
For the moment, Braid lied. But her kind is here to rescue her. So if you're going to intervene, you need to do so now. Otherwise, I won't be able to stop them from freeing her.
They thought only for a moment.
We will send sacrifices, they said.
Not really words, they never were. Sacrifices, in this case, meant delvers that would enter the somewhere and be changed. Maybe those changes could be fixed when they returned, or maybe the delvers they sent would have to be destroyed. Braid pulled back into the somewhere to reports of 13 enormous objects appearing on the battlefield, as large as small planets, nearly rivaling detritus in size. Gavrich stared with a wide-eyed expression, perhaps horror, perhaps respect.
We are here, the delvers sent.
Excellent, Braid said. Let's see what you can do. Annihilate only the ones I indicate.
This is painful, they sent. This place is pain.
There might be a way you can withstand it better, Braid sent. Do you know what one of you did in joining with Spensa?
Something terrible.
Would you like to be something terrible? She asked. To have power like she has?
They shied away from the thought. All except one. Even in the brief moments they'd been out of the nowhere, they'd started to change, and this single one was intrigued.
Can we bond? Braid asked it. You and me?
No, it said. That would change me too much. But perhaps we can talk. I will stay near and watch you. Well, that would have to do.
Chapter 49, Kimmelin. Kimmelin knew that the Saints had a plan for every person's life, but the Saints, they loved variety. The purpose of life was to learn, and the way to learn was through excitement, emotion, and change. Boredom was the path to complacency, and complacency the path to stagnation. Still, she wished the Saints would, for once, send her a tad more boredom. Just a milliliter or two of stagnation wasn't too much to ask for, was it? She hung in the void of space, in formation with skyward flight, watching the blackness erupt with clouds of smoke and incongruous lightning. The Delvers, according to Spensa, had once been AIs housed in a round floating globe. When they came to this dimension, they instinctively made a copy of that innocuous housing to contain their consciousness. It was difficult to see anything innocuous in what emerged. Massive spheres the size of small planets, with spines jutting from them in a terrible lack of symmetry, surrounded by particles of dust like a shroud,
and armed with thousands of self-propelling asteroids that could smash into anyone who drew near. Her mind reeled, trying to comprehend it. From space, it was already difficult to understand that a nearby planet was big enough to hold billions of individuals. Here were 13 of them, smaller, yes, but still moon-size, emerging from smoke fields tens of thousands of kilometers across, shoving aside inhibitor stations as they grew. She could only take it all in because she was far enough away. But distances in space were deceptive and difficult to judge. Even as distant as she was, these smoke fields and emerging planetoids took up her entire field of vision. For the first time in this fight, she was truly afraid, truly worried that this was it, that she and her friends were doomed, that she'd never return to her family, her sisters, her parents, her girlfriend. How did you fight something so incredible, let alone 13 of them? The weapons on Detritus could destroy a fleet, but not planets. She knew from the recordings they'd found on Platform Prime that a single Delver had been enough to wipe out all life on the planet, defenses or no defenses. Kimmelin said over the comm. Anyone got any ideas? No one replied. Chapter 50. I felt the Delvers arrive. I heard Braid speak to them. I felt the terror from my friends. It was time.
Spencer, Embot said in my mind. I have the answer.
What? I said to him, and prepared to step into the nowhere.
You need to bring the somewhere here, he said. Not a pinprick, not a drip, but a tide. They commented out their memories, but they aren't code any longer. And the presence of time will quickly weather away the scab they placed over their pain. That's why they fear you. You belong to both worlds now.
Scud. Could I do that?
I can help, he said.
I entered that place, a sea of nothingness, not blackness or whiteness, though sometimes my mind had to see it that way. I couldn't comprehend nothing, so my brain stamped the nowhere with an analog. I visualized myself floating in blackness with Embot at my side in the form of a blazing white hole. The eyes were there. I remembered how frightened I'd been when I'd first begun to see them reflected in my canopy. That sense of malevolence had been almost nauseating. Now I was accustomed to those stares. I turned around, picturing myself as I was, a young woman with a body, a uniform, and a sense of self. Chet doubling me like a glowing shadow. I could be me in here. I'd reached that point in developing my powers. It was part of the somewhere that I carried with me for all this place's efforts to make me forget it. I could carry more if I tried. So, you'll destroy us, I said to the Delvers. You'll perpetuate the pain and sorrow. You'll force my hand. You are pain, they sent back. You must stop existing. Offer yourself up. Save them. It was strangely tempting. A part of me longed to die in heroic sacrifice as Gran-Gran had, while another part recognized that I'd been indoctrinated by my upbringing. Gran-Gran hadn't simply sacrificed herself. She'd done it to accomplish something. I'd learned the difference between a meaningless gesture and true heroism back in flight school. Beyond that, I knew I couldn't trust the Delvers. They'd proven in the past that promises meant nothing to them, though perhaps I could use their fear as leverage. Bring back the 13 you sent to the somewhere, I said to the eyes. Show me you're willing to deal. Something happened then. I could sense the somewhere, where the 13 Delvers had created bodies for themselves. Vast, planet-sized mazes full of dangerous bits they could break off to form fleets. They held off their assault at my request. They didn't return to the nowhere, but they peeked in, like I was doing at the moment. Now, the greater group said, give yourself to destruction.
I will not, I told them, because it wouldn't stop you. I've seen the way you deal, heard you admit to wanting to immediately break your word. If I give myself up to you, that won't remove your pain. Even if I vanish, you'll still lash out at the somewhere. You know this to be true.
It is your fault, they thought. You noises, you pains. Leave us alone and we'll leave you alone.
Not possible, I said. This place isn't yours just because you've decided to claim it. It's part of the Tanix, part of me, part of our very being.
We can't stop coming here because not all of us can control our powers. Even if we could, we couldn't leave it any more than we could leave off breathing. We would come by accident, in dreams, in moments of panic, in times of exploration.
Then we will destroy you.
I formed a sword from nothing and held it up before me. Things like that just worked in here.
So be it. Embat.
Like this, he said,
and showed me. The explanation defies words. He sent me the information, similar to the way people would send me coordinates so I could hyperjump. He fed me a pathway. You might call it a code or a program, but I preferred to see it as a tactical battle map for destroying the Delvers via the pain in their souls. Within me, Chet vibrated with horror, determination, pain.
This will work, he thought to me. It is terrible. A weapon only you can wield.
I was a being between two worlds. This let me draw the ability to change from the somewhere, but manipulate the essence of this eternity inside the nowhere. And it made sense. The pain the Delvers hated was the somewhere. Time, change, leaking into their world. The more powerful the Cytonic, the more leaked through. And having melded as I had, I was the most powerful they'd ever seen. I focused that power into the blade I had conjured, then thrust it forward with all of my might, and it ripped a hole into the somewhere. Time entered this place of timelessness, a wave of it that exploded from me like a sphere of green light, washing over the Delvers, tearing away the patch they'd put onto their souls to hide away their pain. Flawed as it was, the patch came off easily as a strong wind from a passing starship pulled the dust up off the ground, stripping the top layer of soil. This was what they'd feared. The power I'd gained by merging with Chet, by traveling the nowhere, by learning of their past. I knew that deep down, they were actually very weak. They'd fled here because they were weak. Scud, they'd always known. Otherwise, after patching up their pain, they could have stayed in the somewhere. They'd come here because they'd known their solution wouldn't last. Not unless they found a place where everything lasted. In the face of raw change, that temporary solution wore away. The Delvers howled in agony, their wound exposed. They vibrated, reaching for each other, searching for one of them that wasn't hurt, one they could copy to take away the pain. There was no such refuge. Now, all I had to do was pop back into the somewhere, leaving them consumed by this agony. Except, would that be enough? The somewhere would occasionally still leak into here. The Delvers could perhaps claw their way free and create another patch for themselves, or worse, delete those memories entirely, finally purge themselves of this weakness, feel no pain at all. Then they'd be able to rampage against us without cost. In military action, you had to be careful not to create a greater threat by accident, striking a neutral party, pushing an enemy into a corner, taking away opportunities to surrender. These were all things that could backfire very easily. What if, by showing the Delvers how weak they were, I prompted them to eventually jettison that weakness and attack us? So far, the only reason we'd survived was because coming to fight us hurt them so badly. As they cowered and cringed before me, mighty though they'd once been, I had to ask the question, could I destroy them forever?
Yes,
Chet said softly from beside me.
You could.
How? I asked.
The infinite loop that M-Bot suggested before would most likely work, he explained. Though we are no longer AIs, we are susceptible to some of their maladies, just as you, though no longer amoebas, can dehydrate. See how they search one another for relief? If M-Bot were to imitate one of them that had peace, but secretly sent them in a circular loop of thought, it could trap them in their pain forever. Even if the somewhere leaked in, it might take them millennia to escape, longer.
Trapped all that time, though? M-Bot asked. In agony?
It was what they deserved for all the people they'd killed. I stood over them, the executioner with her axe ready to strike. And Scud, I hesitated. Such pain. In the face of it, my anger faded, and I saw them as they truly were. Essentially newborns, entities that had never been given a chance to grow, to learn, toddlers with the power to annihilate planets. In that moment, I felt sorry for them.
That's what you did to me, Chet thought.
What? I asked.
You've always wondered why I changed, why I was willing to turn away from Starsight.
I pled with the others, I said, like I pled with you. I asked them to see the noises as people.
And how did you see the Delvers?
How?
You saw a person in me, he responded. I could sense that. It changed me. Or rather, it made me willing to change.
I looked upon the vast sea of Delvers again, an ocean of white pinpricks of light, tiny eyes trembling.
So, do we strike? M-Bot asked. The 13 in the somewhere are moving again, Spencer. They're sending swarms of stone to attack our friends. If we attack those in here, I believe they'd return to the nowhere to try to help.
You could trap them too, Spencer.
What do we do?
I had to try something first. I stepped away from Chet. I somehow relaxed my grip on him, and our souls began to separate. He grabbed hold of me like a child might a parent leaving them alone for the first time, but I soothed him, and he eventually accepted it. We separated, and he became a glowing light next to me. Brilliant and white, but with a warmth within that I could only see as red.
Look, I said to the others. See.
His light hovered there. I could see the pain inside him as if it were a visual thing, a black wrinkle like a small crack. Small. The others were shattered by it, consumed by it, but his had decreased. It can be better, I told them. It can get better. You tried to hide it, but that doesn't work. Not with mortals, and not with immortals. Look at him. See how he's grown by living in the somewhere. The others continued to cower in their agony, and they pulled away from him, refusing to see growth as a solution. There were too many of the Delvers, unfortunately, for my still mortal mind to comprehend. So I picked one of them, a lump, like a stone from the floor of one of the caverns I explored. A quivering white light fractured by black lines. I knelt beside it, then gestured to Chet.
You can overcome it, I whispered to the Delver. He is the same as you.
No, he changed.
You can change.
No, never. Change is pain.
Change is pain that fades, I said. You have only pain that is eternal.
I can't.
You can. The Delver retreated farther, the light dimming. We might not need to freeze them in agony, because I had the feeling this pain alone would kill them. In here, where thoughts were reality, pain could kill.
I should have let it.
But instead, I reached out to the Tanix.
You are hurt?
They asked, envisioning me, as always, as a slug.
No, but this one is, I said, indicating the Delver. Of course, the minds of the Tanix pulled back in fear. I wasn't sure, but I felt that they'd evolved over the past centuries to avoid the Delvers, or at least to avoid something like them, something that hunted using cytonics. The slugs could pass through here unseen, and they saw Delvers as predators. I tried to change that. I projected to the slugs how I now saw the Delvers. The truth. These were not monsters or predators. They were people.
Like you saw me,
Chet said in my mind. Like I saw you, I agreed. I showed that to the Tanix and waited, hopeful. Finally, I got back a set of thoughts.
Those poor slugs.
That warmth from before returned, the love and support, turned not to me this time, but to the Delvers, toward horrors that had destroyed planets, toward people who didn't know how to control what they were, who had tried to hide their pain. The love of the oppressed found the souls of the broken, and the result was light, cracks withdrawing, pain being eased. It started with the one I'd picked and radiated outward.
How?
Embot asked, hovering up beside me. How is it happening? What they've always needed, I said to him, was to know that they weren't alone.
What will that mean?
He asked.
Change,
Chet replied, hovering up on our other side.
At last.
Chapter 51, Braid. Braid cursed softly, standing in her ripped-apart command room. Near her, the hologram map showed the 13 planet-sized Delvers, dwarfing even the largest carrier, suddenly motionless in space, no longer advancing on the rebellious forces. What was wrong? She looked at Spensa. The woman's mind was fully in the nowhere, though her body remained behind. She wasn't hyper-jumping. She was communing with the creatures in the other dimension. But could one person stand up to the entire might of the Delvers? That seemed impossible, even for Spensa. Scrud. And yet, Braid didn't dare try to touch her. Not with the power Spensa had radiated. That Delver combined with her, it could destroy Braid.
Sir, an aide said, rushing over with a data pad. It's the inhibitors and the communicators. Their disobedience is growing and growing. They're expending a cytonic effort into the nowhere. The moment they started, those Delvers you called stopped.
Scrut again. The slugs were involved in this somehow? Braid took another shot at Spensa with her sidearm just to be certain. It still didn't work. The blast was hyper-jumped away before hitting her. Helpless though she seemed, Spensa was untouchable. Fortunately, the slugs were not.
Execute them, she said.
Which ones?
The aide asked. Braid surveyed the battlefield. Her last fighters, which had no carrier support. The few capital ships she'd been able to convince to come as emergency reinforcements. This was a disaster, but not an unrecoverable one. She would need to spread propaganda of Winzik's death and the fall of the Defiant carefully to maintain power.
Can we maintain the superiority without the slugs here? She asked.
Yes, an aide said, but barely. I've been running the numbers, as you asked. We'll need to set up a new communications hub.
No, Braid said, no more hubs. We organize in a way that ensures we can't be hit like this ever again.
Scrud. If the slugs here were disobeying en masse, then she'd already lost these ones. They had spread the idea among themselves that they could disobey. She needed to get her ships out of here, the ones that, hopefully, had hyperslugs who hadn't been corrupted by rebellion. But she couldn't leave such a wealth of resources behind. Time to cut her losses.
Kill them, she said.
All of them? The aide asked.
Yes. Every slug on this station, every slug in their inhibitor pods, and every single slug on Evensong. She looked to her generals, who seemed shocked, but then several nodded at her grimly. If the Delvers wouldn't fight for them, it was time to pull out, and they couldn't leave their hyperdrives and other tools in the hands of their enemies. Just as you burned your supplies when you left a fortress, they needed to burn the slugs to keep them from falling into enemy hands.
Kill them, she said. Now.
Chapter 52. The warmth and light spread through the Delvers as, understanding what the slugs had done, they turned to help their fellows. Like a virus in a system, no, like an update patch being propagated, light forced back lines of darkness, spreading outward. The magnitude of it daunted me, but most of all, I was awed by the willingness of the slugs to help. After years of abuse, they had come to the aid of even the Delvers, soothing their pain as they'd learned to do for one another. A voice fluted in my mind. Doomslug, I said, where are you? Another fluting. On Evensong, the large platform at the center of the system. Brez, the much smaller station I was on, was a good 15-minute flight from it. She'd managed to get free. How? I asked. Sneaky, she sent back, showing a flashing set of images. The longer I knew her, the easier this was to interpret, and the easier it was to make words from her impressions. She'd used her fluting to imitate human voices as they'd taken her? They'd been shocked and brought her to be studied instead of locked up, so she'd been in a medical bay cage, in a room that inhibited cytonics, where slugs could be held in flimsier cages to be studied with no worry that they'd teleport away. In the chaos of the attack, the scientists had been watching screens in the next room, so she'd been able to rock back and forth and make her cage fall off the shelf, breaking the lock. After that, she'd snuck over to hide in a box by the door and called out for help, imitating one of the scientists. They'd come running in and she'd snuck out, free of the room's interference, and had slipped into the ventilation system to get away.
Wow. Sneaky, she repeated. Have become spy slug.
Spy slug,
M'Bot repeated, imitating her fluting voice. Come to me, I said.
Dangerous, she sent back. Hiding now, spy slug. Very sneaky. Is it safe?
I wasn't certain. I'd been paying little attention to my body in the somewhere. Why hadn't they attacked me there? I peeked into the somewhere to find them trying. Chet was protecting me, it seemed. As a Delver, he could cut through any inhibitors and was far more powerful than Braid. I was no longer bonded to him. We were separating into two beings again as he helped facilitate the change in the Delvers, showing them the path to healing. As I contemplated this, I heard a screech of pain. One of the slugs who had been helping the Delvers suddenly vanished. Oh, Scud.
Braid has realized what's happening, Chet said.
Strangely, his voice was becoming familiar again, turning into that of the man I'd traveled with in the nowhere. That felt so right. This was him, the him he'd decided to be. I knew it was a persona, but what else were personalities? Ways for souls to interact with the world.
Miss Nightshade, this is a singularly distressing turn of events.
Braid was exacting revenge the only way she could, on the defenseless. I controlled my building fury over that and contacted the Tanix.
You need to switch sides, I sent to the Tanix. Not alone, not one of you. Together. It's time.
More of them started to die, fried by their own housings. They were terrified, but at the moment I didn't have time to console them.
You have to turn off your inhibitor fields and let us help.
A chaotic jumble of images and voices assaulted me. They'd acted together to support the Delvers, but now they were frightened individuals, and getting them to focus was difficult.
Some listened to me and agreed it was time to try resisting. Those turned off their inhibition fields. But many more were afraid. Coordinating them would be like trying to get thousands of people in a room to exit safely during a bombardment and run for the lower caverns.
What is happening?
A powerful set of voices assaulted me. I spun to find 100,000 Delvers looking at me with piercing, burning white eyes.
Braid, I explained. The human you made a deal with. She's realized the slugs were helping you.
What? The Delvers said, their voices hitting me like a wave of force.
What does this mean?
She's executing them, Chet said. She's killing them. Ending their existences in pain and fire.
The Delvers took the briefest moment to process this. Then I was assaulted with words that had the power of mountains crashing together.
She is hurting the little Delvers?
Chapter 53, Braid.
What is taking so long? Braid demanded, seizing the control pad from the aide. Isn't there a button to just end them?
Yes, the aide said. In case of capture, those in their cages can be eliminated in groups to prevent them from being taken. But nobody thought we'd ever want to eliminate all of the inhibitors at once. That felt like a weakness waiting to be exploited. These can only be deactivated one at a time.
Gah, Braid said, tapping buttons, killing a slug with each push. This would take forever. Someone call up Evensong for me.
The same Dione commander from before appeared on the screen. They were in charge of the slug containment units hidden inside the old abandoned platform.
Sir?
They asked.
How many Tanics do you have in containment? Around 20,000 hyperdrives, some 6,000 communicators, and 4,000 inhibitors. Most of the out-of-service reserves of the entire superiority.
Great, she said.
End them.
Sir? They asked, alarmed. Braid gestured toward the hologram, where inhibitors were going offline by the dozen. Not just the ones she killed, but many others choosing to turn off their inhibitor fields, betraying the superiority. The enemy would soon be able to jump their planet-sized battle station anywhere in the system it wanted.
The inhibitors are malfunctioning and aiding the enemy. This entire place is about to be captured. Execute your slugs. But, sir, they said, you put them on lockdown earlier. Cancel it, idiot. You insisted on biometrics, they said. I can't do it. I need a ranking officer here in person to undo the locks.
Braid felt a cold chill run through her. It was accompanied by a sound that warped her from the inside. Killing the little Delvers? Killing the ones who held us? Killing the ones who loved us? The rage emanating from those voices could have melted steel. It was time for her to be somewhere else. She tried to hyperjump and found herself inhibited. What? She glanced toward Spensa, who had a grin plastered on her face. Well, hell below. When had the girl learned to do that? Braid tossed up her own inhibition field. Would it even do anything? The warping to the air had vanished, so maybe.
Move! Braid shouted to her troops. The station is lost!
She dashed toward the door, joined by her command staff and soldiers, who fortunately had the training to respond to this. The aides and functionaries, always a bother, most of them reminded her of Kuna and their ilk, scrambled behind. At the end of the hall, just before the docks, Braid pointed.
Caldwell, position the honor guard here. Stop her if she comes this way.
The Tanasi saluted, and the others fell into a defensive position, taking cover in doorways. Several began pulling a metal desk from a side room to blockade the corridor. Braid dashed into the docking bay and skidded over to her ship,
leaping to the wing and hauling herself to her cockpit. The command staff did likewise, taking the other five ships, some of them being forced to double up, with one person squeezed in the storage space behind the seat. By the time the aides and functionaries began piling in, almost everyone was starting to take off.
"Wait!"
one aide called, the sniveling Dione who had helped her execute slugs earlier.
"What about us?"
"Try," Braid shouted over her speakers. "To die without too much whining."
"But..."
Braid closed her canopy and thumbed on her boosters, vaporizing the Dione, who had strayed too close to the ship. Nice. One less person for the enemy to interrogate. She blasted out of the command station, intent on getting far enough away from Spensa that she could access her powers. With the command staff joining her, she left no ships behind for Spensa to use in pursuit. "Something is wrong," a voice said in her mind. That one Delver, who had talked to her earlier, the one who had been intrigued by her offer to meld.
"The others among us, they are changing. They are betraying what we are."
"Not you?"
Braid sent.
"No. I will never change. I cannot change. Not in that way. I am the only one who is pure. The others are not."
"Good," she thought. "Let's bond."
"No. No, that will change me too much."
Braid sighed. "All right, then go to the station I just left."
"And do what?"
"Stop the abomination we call Spensa," she sent. "Or at least prevent her from following me. Do this, and maybe we can change your friends back."
"They are not my friends. They are me."
But it seemed inclined to do as she said, and as long as it was willing to help, that was all that mattered for now.